Everyone's online? Shall we begin? All right. Let's all bring our palms together then to make our heartfelt veneration to the Lord Buddha. Let us remind ourselves that he, the teacher, is the epitome of wisdom, the fount of all, the fount of compassion. And this is not a mere token of our respect or a mark of our obeisance, but this is a pledge of our allegiance to the Buddha, which represents the ultimate destination of happiness, the Dhamma, which represents the path, which is the truth, and the Sangha, which represents our practice, that we must all undertake by ourselves. And it is for that purpose we are here today, to help us progress on that path by understanding the truth, so that we can reach the ultimate destination of Nibbana. This is our venture. This is our commitment. With that in mind, let us chant the Namaskara. We will seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, having now understood what they mean. And then we will observe the precepts which will serve us on our path to liberation, to keep us virtuous and to remind us of the evils and their consequences. We will then invite the countless sentient beings out there who deserve this just as much as you and I, as they have been those who have been with us in this countless eons, countless journey of, endless journey of samsara, being by our side, helping us, guiding us, supporting us, parenting us, teaching us, and so on. This is our opportunity to pay our debt of gratitude. So with that in mind, we will invite them to join us, witness this meritorious deed, and rejoice in this wonderful occasion. So to begin and commence with the sermon, let us chant the Namaskara and make start with today's proceeding.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
I think it's quite appropriate if we can start today's sermon by rejoicing in all the merits that we earned last week. So we have a short video to show you all, so that you can live it once more. There may be those who were there here today. There may be those here today who weren't there that week. This 150, when it comes to age, we just say age is just a number, right? But like I explained to you during the benedictory sermon at the end, this is an achievement. The real achievement is not the number, though. The real achievement is what we have achieved collectively. It's the amassing of this community. It's you coming together to have made 150 possible. I always celebrate the journey. The destination is just a gift. What is more difficult, to study and face the exam or to get the result? Which one's more difficult? It's to study for the exam, right? You don't have to do anything for the result. They give it. They give that for free. But the exam, studying for it, working hard, staying up late, all that requires hard work, diligence, focus. That's what yields the results. So the 150th is no big deal to me. But what is quite a big deal to me is that you have made it possible. You have worked as a team. You have worked together. And I know even at this moment, as I say, you're here because of someone else. This rings very true for many of you. You're here because of someone else. The same can be said about the Anagarika Mahatmyas at the monastery who were there last week. And the Anagarika Mahatmyas who were at the monastery. They will also have the same to say. They're there because someone brought them along. I want you to rejoice in this moment, in that context. Let's rejoice in the fact that there were people there who cared enough to bring us along to this party. Usually you're very happy and excited when people invite you to a party. But what's there at the end of it? You've danced, had something to eat, sang a few songs. People tolerated you by listening to it. And if you're lucky, they smiled and they laughed and they clapped, which was you thought was an encore, but it was kind of an invitation to get back to your seat. But the long and the short of this is, all those parties never really got you anywhere. But what about this party? This is a very special kind of party. This is the party to end all parties. Is it not? Yeah. This is the party that will end all parties. So it is that party that we celebrate. Just think about all the goodness that is possible because the Sambuddha Sasana still prevails. You are able to invite the Mahasangha. They were able to become the Mahasangha. You know, each of them had a story. And they have come here and shared with you their stories. Each of those monks that were there today, on that day, yesterday, last week, each one of them has come before you, precepted you, shared with you their story. How the Sasana made an impact on their lives. How they were one person for one part of their life, one half of their life, and then the Dhamma transformed them. And then they changed beyond their own imaginations. They changed beyond anything that they thought was possible. That is all because of the Sasana. See what the Sasana has done to people, to us, to me, to these young men and women. What were just meant to be meaningless lives, living just because they were born. Because death was not an option. There was not going to be a point in choosing death because you'd have to just be reset, start again. Now they have found purpose, ladies and gentlemen. Because of the Sasana, you were able to invite them here. Because of the Sasana, we have a Guru Deva. Because of the Sasana, you heard the sermon. Because of the Sasana, we have had 150 sermons. These are not musicals. These weren't dramas. These weren't some theatrical performances. These were liberating sermons, weren't they? Life-transforming sermons. These were the reasons why your life became manageable, livable. How you turned out to become a blessing when you were a curse. To society, to your family. The Sasana was the reason today you're able to console yourselves, placate yourselves, make yourselves feel content. You are a very difficult person to satisfy. Let's be honest. You know you are. You know you were, at least, a very difficult individual to satisfy. People had to do all sorts of things to satisfy you. And you went, you kept going after all sorts of people to seek satisfaction, but you never found it. How many hours did you spend in front of a TV? How many hours did you spend with a smartphone on your hand or in your hand just doom scrolling, doing it for no reason but can't put it down either. Think of the number of hours, days, weeks, months and years, ladies and gentlemen. Years of your life that was wasted until you found this asana. Reflect. Because that is what we are celebrating. That is what that video is about. You know how it was very difficult for people to be around you. You know how it was very difficult for you to be around yourself. The shortest, you know, the smallest, slightest, littlest thing would upset you, annoy you, bother you, irritate you. And you know what you're like when you're irritated. I'm not fixing my gaze on anyone. That's I'm just randomly scanning the room in case you think I'm talking about you. I'm not talking about you, but I'm talking about you. I'm talking about you all. You know what you're like when you're irritated. You know what you're like when you're annoyed. You're a menace. And the person who suffers the most is you. That is the pity. For some good that you had done, ultimately you came across the Sambuddha Sasana. The Sambuddha Sasana is your savior, not the Buddha. The Sambuddha Sasana is your savior. It is the Sambuddha Sasana that saved the Buddha himself. He was saved by the Sambuddha Sasana. He himself was saved by the Sambuddha Sasana, and then he lived the remaining years of his life sharing with us, teaching us what the Sambuddha Sasana is all about and how we can all benefit in the Sasana. That is why the words, may long live the Sri Sambuddha Sasana, should be heard. They should be on the tip of every man's tongue. It should also resonate in his heart. For the Sambuddha Sasana to long live, you must embrace the Sasana. To embrace the Sasana is to become the Sasana. To become the Sasana is to realize the Dhamma, to realize the truth. You invited the Mahasangha and you made an alms offering. Two on the same day. Very unusual. Not very common. Even at the monastery, we only do a midday alms. The morning alms is not in, devotees are not invited to partake in that. But here, you had that opportunity. So you all got together. And you brought with you what you made with love, affection, devotion, and respect. Because there was no set menu. You were free to bring whatever you liked. Whatever you thought would be a demonstration of your love for the Mahasasana, for the Mahasangha. Whatever you thought was going to be a mark of your obeisance, your high regard, your devotion to the Sasana, you were given the opportunity to express that. Did the Swaminarayan come up to you and ask you, what have you got, madam? It all went into the alms bowls, and then it all went into one big container. Everything from everyone, all went into one big pot. This is the part you didn't see. Everything that everyone served went into one big pot. And then you took our alms bowls away, or rather you brought the food to us and then started serving us. We looked at our alms bowls, eyes in the alms bowl, just to see whether it was enough quantity. When the quantity was right, we said, that's enough. Not when the color was right, not when the smell was right, not when the taste was right, but when the quantity was right. Because you were serving us energy. And energy is what we need. Energy can be measured in kilos. Did you know that? I could do the same with my eyes closed, hold the arms pull up like this and tell you when to stop. Because it wouldn't matter what goes into it. As long as you can assure me that it is something edible, it is not harmful, if you can assure me of that, then it doesn't matter what goes into it. When I know it feels kind of right, it's about the right quantity, I will show you my hand to indicate that it's enough. And I shall have you know that that has become possible because of the Sambuddha Sasana. I was not someone who ate like that. As Guru Andhra said, food used to eat me. Today I eat my food. And from the moment the Swaminarayanas arrived here, you walked them under the umbrellas, on the pavada, under the mudukuda. The children were there with flowers in their hands to greet the Mahasangha, all the while earning merits. You know, this is why it's so wonderful to be close to the Mahasangha. Not everyone has that opportunity. Trust me, not everyone has that opportunity. Think about your friends, your family, who migrated because they thought the grass was greener on the other side, on the other side of the ocean. Now they hardly get to see a member of the Sangha. Therefore, no almsgivings, no pirit, no offerings, no invitations, no pirit nul, nothing. No red robes, no saffron robes, nothing. No counsel, no guidance, no advice, no checking whether what you think is right. Then you are just unto yourself. What you think is right, you do. I think of the Mahasangha as life teachers. That is how I understand the Mahasangha. Teachers of life. How to live life. A maths teacher teaches you how to work your sums. A science teacher teaches you how to balance your chemical formulae. A physics teacher teaches you how to work out the physical properties of the world in which we live. But the Mahasangha teaches you how to live. Because that's what you have to do until you're dead. Live, and live right. Without a teacher, you won't live right. See, before I met a teacher, someone put this on the board. Before I met a teacher, someone put this on the board, on a piece of paper, and said, look at this, and do what you think is right. So I looked at it. This was before I'd met a teacher. And they were going to help me. They helped me with doing that. And I thought, oh, no. So they said, they handed the pen over to me. This was before I met a teacher. And then I went, oh. Nice, right? That's what I did before I met a teacher. So the person who gave me this and saw me doing this realized something. He realized that I needed a teacher. So he said, no, Putta, that's not what you do. Not here. I couldn't understand. I said, what's wrong with that? I was so deluded, I didn't even know what was wrong with that. I didn't know what was wrong with something that was very wrong. So then he introduced me to a math teacher. And after a few lessons with my math teacher, I realized what was wrong. So not only did I erase this, I undid what I'd done wrong. But my teacher was so good that he didn't just stop there. He didn't just teach me to undo what I'd done wrong, but also to now do what is right. So he had me do that. That is what happens when you have a teacher and when you don't have a teacher. Now apply the same principle, but to life. Apply the same principle to life. You can understand it when I put a couple of numbers on the board. Apply the same principle to life. The Mahasangha are our life teachers. The Sambuddha Sasana is the theory of how you live right. The Mahasangha are those who practice that theory. And the Buddha is someone who has learned how to live right. So all that merit that you acquired, that you accumulated throughout last week's procession, that event, it is to help you, ladies and gentlemen, to achieve this, so that you can work out the right answer to life. They say work out the right answer to life's problems. I don't agree with that. You don't need the Dhamma to answer life's problems. There is no problem. That is what you understand when you understand the Dhamma. There is no problem. I want you to distinguish the difference between these two things. There's a very strong distinction. Here's a problem, let's find the right answer. And then there is no problem at all. When we don't have the Dhamma, we feel that there are problems, that life is full of problems. And we have to find answers to them. We have to find solutions to them. That's how we feel. But the truth is, there are no problems in life. Life just is. It's just life, that's it. Is there a problem with what you see? I show you something. Let me show you this. Is there a problem? But if this was a color that you didn't like, now there'd be a problem. If this was a color that you didn't like, there would be a problem. And if you had a favorite color, there would still be a problem because you would want to see that color. So then you have a problem. But is there a real problem out here? Is there a problem with this fan? No, there is no problem. The Dhamma teaches you that there is no problem here. That is what the Dhamma teaches you. It's not here to help you solve your problems. It's here to help you understand that there are no problems. Do you understand the difference? Assume you don't like the color green. Let's assume you don't like the color green. Now we have a problem. The moment I hold this up in my hand, we have a problem, don't we? What is the problem? The problem is that you're seeing the color green. That is the problem. That is what you feel the problem is. Swaminarayana is showing you something you don't like to see. So you think you have a problem now. So then we give you the Dhamma. The Dhamma helps you understand that there is nothing wrong with green. For you to not like green. There's nothing wrong with green. Why do you dislike green? Why is it a color you don't like? There's nothing wrong with green. Once you understand that, you're okay with this. This is the same green that I showed you a moment ago. What's changed then? Your thinking that there's a problem here is what changed, not what's here. So do you realize that there are no problems in this world? Let me name a few problems that you have. The death of a loved one. Problem, right? It's a problem. So what do we try to do when those are the problems that come to us in our lives? When we hear about someone's imminent death, we try to push that event back as much as possible. We try to extend their lives so that they can live longer, not for their benefit, but because their loss is going to mean a great loss to us. I mean, if we really cared about their lives, why don't we just go healing everyone in the world? There are many people who are on the verge of death, but we frankly don't care about most of them, if not all of them. There are only those people who we care about, those people who are close to us, those people who we consider our friends and family, we care about. So for them, we want to get the best treatment so that we can extend their lives. Why? Where's the problem? Their death is not the problem. See how you fool yourselves? By saying that that is the problem? Death is not the problem. Their death is not the problem. But their loss, as in their passing away, is a problem to me. That's why I want to do something about it. But once you understand the Dhamma, now you learn to be okay with that. See, the Dhamma helps you to be okay with anything. Meaning, there were no problems out there in the first place. So the Dhamma is not here to help us solve life's problems. What is it here for then? To help us realize that there are no problems to solve in the first place. Do you understand that this is a complete flip in the way that we look at life? It is because of the sasana we are able to come to this understanding, ladies and gentlemen. You have come to this liberating realization because of the sasana. Otherwise, think about how you lived your lives. Today it has become very common. It's a very regular thing for you to invite the Swaminarayanas. Every week you meet a Swaminarayana now. Not one, but two. Sometimes, some days even three. See, this has become a weekly occurrence now, hasn't it? Just go back a few years before you came across a sasana. How often did you meet a Swaminarayana? How often did you offer a Swaminarayana a gilampasa, a cup of water, some alms food? How often did you do that? Once every? It's called blue moon. Once a month. That's why they're called blue moons. Once a month, if you were lucky. But let's be honest, not all of you went to the temple once a month. Some of you might not have even stepped foot into a temple. Because you thought that was an optional thing. Because that was religion. Religion is optional. Merit making is optional, but money making? That's mandatory. It's compulsory. That has to happen. And I understand why. Because without money, you can't live. Without money, you can't live. Or so they say. I don't have any money, but I live. But your philosophy is, without money, you can't live. But then we will quickly remind me, Swaminarayana, yes, you don't have money, but we are the one who give you money. I know that's what you're thinking. So show us how you're going to live without us, Swami Nansen. That's like when my mother once asked me, Ruta, you know, if everyone went and ordained in the sasana, right, where would there be doctors to treat the patients? Who would run the hospitals? Who would run the buses? Who would run the schools? Who would do the teaching? Who would run the country? Where would be the bankers? Where would people put their money if everyone went and ordained? It's a question she asked me a long, long, long time ago. She doesn't ask me such silly questions now. My reply to her was, Amma, I will answer that question the day that the sun rises in the west. Because the probability of what you're suggesting is just the same. Because this is a very hypothetical question. Never in the world will everyone, every man, every woman would want to go and ordain in this asana. Not just because they don't have the need to go to the sasana, but also because they don't have enough merit to go to the sasana. Just because a sasana is there doesn't mean you're going to get onto it. You have to have merits for that. So not everyone in the world has enough merits to come into the sasana, even if the Sambuddha sasana is thriving. See, when the Buddha was around, did every man go and become a monk? The Buddha was there, for heaven's sake, the Buddha. Just imagine how fortunate they were. The Buddha in person, he was there. In real flesh and blood, he was there. Today all we have is a statue. Every day and night we come and worship at his feet, but that's just a statue. But 2,500 years ago, he was there in person. Did every man go and ordain? Did every woman walk up to him and say, Venerable Sir, please accept me into the order. I wish to be free from this womanhood. I wish to be from humanhood. I wish to be free from everything. Please accept me. No. There were people who still suffered plenty. But they didn't want solace in the sasana. So even when the Buddha was around, and not everyone wanted to go ordain in the sasana, what is the likelihood that that will happen today? You tell me. That's why my reply to her was justified. I said, the day that the sun rises in the west, I will answer that question, Amma, so you come back and talk to me when that happens. So to this day, she has not come back to me and said, this morning the sun rose in the west. I want an answer to my question. See, to come into the order requires a very special alignment of stars. It doesn't happen for everyone, and it doesn't happen every day for everyone either. Even for those who do, it doesn't happen every day. It requires a tremendous amount of merits. Tremendous amounts of merit. So we do these occasions, these events, so that you can earn these merits. That's why this is not just a sermon. That's why we encourage this community to work together, to do merit together, to share with one another. I know the work that you put in to do all this deco, to do this, to do that, to do the patkara, to do the pavada, to do the flower decorations and all that. I encourage that because it's all going to help you, ladies and gentlemen. This is fuel for the journey ahead. Maybe in this sasana, maybe in the Maitri Buddha sasana. I don't know which sasana you're going to attain your arahathood is in, but it'll happen in one sasana or the other. It has to. It has to. There's only one exit. There's only one exit from sansara, and that is in a sasana, in a Sambuddha sasana. If it's not in this sasana, it has to be in the next sasana. We only have another 2,000 or odd years left in this sasana. Once this is done, now you have to wait until the next sasana comes along. And the time between two sasanas is not a few years. is usually expressed in eons, not years. And they're usually expressed as incalculable eons, meaning it's difficult to give a number. That's how huge they are. But in one sasana or the other, you shall find your escape. You shall find your peace. Whenever that sasana comes, let's assume it's the Maitri Buddha, or let's assume it's some other Buddha, I don't even know what the name is of that Buddha after the Maitri Buddha. Let's assume it's in 10 Buddha's time. Doesn't that give you a fright? As I say, let's assume in the 10 Buddha's time, you're in your 10 Buddha's time. Yeah, possible, Swami. Doable, doable. I think by that time I will have paid my mortgage. My children will have finished their schooling. I'm talking 10 Buddha's time. You're working out your retirement plan. This is no laughing matter. This is no laughing matter. There's nothing more scarce than a Buddha sasana. They say diamonds are rare. Heck no. Sasanas are rare. In comparison to a sasana, every rock you see outside is a diamond. Just to give you an idea of the sasana scarcity, every rock, every pebble, every grain of sand you see outside is a diamond. How often do you see diamonds every day? Seldom, right? Very hard, barely do you see a diamond, because they are considered to be very rare. But in comparison to the Sambuddha Sasana, ladies and gentlemen, please do remember, every grain of sand outside, you have diamonds on the soles of your feet right now. If you didn't rub your feet after you walked outside, there'll be a few specks of dust or maybe some grains of sand on your feet right now. Each of them is a diamond in comparison to how rare the sasana is. Do you understand the seriousness of this? I'm not just giving you these metaphors for effect. I mean this. That's how rare the sasana is. That's how rare solutions to your problems are. Real solutions to your problems, that's how rare they are. I'm talking about real solutions to your problems. Not just time wasters. If you want to watch something, if you want to see something, bring in a television home. Is that a real solution to a problem? You want to see things, you want to look at things, and you bring a TV home. Is that a real solution to a problem? Why do you say it's not a real solution? Why do you say it's not a real solution? Because no amount of doing it takes away the need for it. Yes? No amount of doing it takes away the need for it. If you're hungry, is eating food a real solution? What do you think? Seems about right, doesn't it? That's what we've been doing all our lives. Whenever we are hungry, we ate something. Is that a real solution? Why do you say it's not a real solution? Because no matter how much you eat, in a couple of hours' time, you're hungry again. So it's not a real solution. Then, if you want to listen to something nice, if you want to please your ears, and you switch on your favorite radio station, is that a real solution? You buy the records, you download your music, you get a hi-fi system, surround sound. How's that? And then you play your music Or you get the finest headsets, the most expensive type. They have the finest quality music production. And you put them on. It gives you an immersive experience. You know what I'm talking about, right? The immersive experience. You could emphasize that. The immersive experience. That one I'm talking about. The one that makes you feel like the trumpet is right next to your ear. Or the violin is right next to you. And it gives you this effect like you're in the middle of a symphony, an orchestra. That one, is that a real solution to a problem? I mean, you can easily spend a couple of thousand dollars. Easily. On a good set of pair of headphones. I'm talking about the real good quality ones. Diamond studded as well. Why not? I mean, you know, why not? As we are splashing it out, right? You know, why not get the best? And the cushions, like the things that go on your ears, they're so comfortable, you can't even feel that it's there. Noise cancelling and all the rest of it. The full bells and whistles. I ask you, is that a real solution? Why not? You know the answer. Why not? Because no matter how many times you do it, it never takes away the need for more. No matter how many times you do it, you feel empty. Is it not just like this? This is your mind, you. Okay? And this, sorry, am I holding it right? I have to ask you. Now, if I held it like this, that's not how you hold one of these, right? How? Like this. Yeah? Okay. Let's try and fill ourselves up. This is your mind. This is all the good stuff. I mean, this is where you find the good stuff, right? On the weekends and the friends come. This is where you find the good stuff, right? So, there's the good stuff. Let's fill your mind up with the good stuff. Yeah? I have a syringe here. This is what you do when you say you live. Now I have a syringe full of the good stuff. Let's fill it up some more. Shall I fill some more? Now this is the good stuff. TV, watching TV, listening to music, eating, dancing. YouTube, spending time watching videos on it, spending time on Facebook, spending time with friends, partying, dancing, going out, movies. Let's keep doing it. Surely at some point, this should fill up to the brim, shouldn't it? So that you feel full. Why is this not filling up? Or maybe I haven't done it enough times. Maybe we have to do it for 50 years. Yeah? Is that why we haven't got there yet? 50 pluses? Ah, 60.
Okay.
Why are you laughing? Why is this not filling up? Do you realize that no matter how many times I do this, I'm filling this up with something that would not remain here. I'm trying to fill this up with something that does not have the ability to fill and remain. That's why no matter how many times I've done this so far, it's still empty. Just like your lives. That's why you're here today, Sunday morning again. Pleading to fill you up. That's what you're here asking me to do. Swaminathan, please can you fill us up? See my life. Still empty, Swaminathan. I tried to fill it up with education, Swaminathan. So I kept doing this. First year of school, second year of school, third year of school. Fast forward time, O levels. No, still not full. A levels. Then I thought it was a local curriculum that had the problem. So I went on and did Cambridge and Edexcel once. Because that's what that, I thought that was where the problem was. The local curriculum is not up to standard. So I did that. Is it full now? Is it full? See, you can keep doing this till the cows come home. Then did your A-levels, then went on to university. So what did you do at university, first year of university? Full now? Because if this is full, you should not be able to put more into it, right? Yes or no? If this is full, you must not be able to put any more into it. Second year of university. Every bit I put in is going in. Because every bit I put in is coming out. Nothing remains. That's why your lives are empty. Just like this glass. Maybe let's try the third year of university. Let's do an honors degree. Fourth year. With the research components and all that. No? Shall we go for the masters? That will do it, won't it? Let's go for the masters. Two of these. Here's the masters, yeah? Maybe another one just for extra assurance, masters. Is it full now? Full? Still? Empty. That's why after you've done the masters, you want to do the next one. That's why you want to do the next one. Because you're still empty. See, 13 years of school, 13 long years of school, and you still feel empty. You think another few years will do it, will do the trick. So you start going to university. I did this, therefore I speak with experience. Trying to fill myself up, but always feeling empty. So once you're done with the master's, still not empty, what's next? PhD, yes, of course, PhD, let's try that then. PhD. PhD. Cool. Have you not heard of people who've got multiple PhDs? Never come across people like that? They have multiple PhDs? Multiple permanent head damages? Why? Because one never filled them up. Therefore, they keep going for more. See? More. So that's the education journey. So we have just filled this up with all the education that you can come across and you can get. Is it full now? Full? No. Right, let's try something else then. Education doesn't seem to do the job for us. Food. Let's try food. Guru Hamdra gave a nice lecture last week, right? Let's try food then. Okay. Shall we try? What shall we? Shall we the starters? What do we get for starters? I can't remember their those names now because we don't get starters anymore. They're at the starters menu, right? So, full? No. Then we go for the main course. Let's try different cuisines. Indian. Chinese. Mongolian. Japanese. Indonesian. How about a nice greasy burger? American style. Still empty. This is why your lives feel like this. Because you're trying to fill your lives up with food. You're trying to fill your lives up with education. That's why you're here every Sunday, still feeling empty. I will tell you the solution to this. But still, I want you to see the problem. Why you feel empty? Look, this is you I hold in my hand. This is your mind that is still empty and void. No matter what, how much you keep putting this stuff into it, there's always room for more because nothing really stuck. Once in a while, you get some takeaway. Shall we try that biryani? Pizza? What else do you want? Teriyaki? What else? I can hear some names whispering into each other's ears. Tonight. What about your favorite chocolate? Pudding? Shall we try some ice cream? Still empty. This is how you spend your life. This is what I mean by life. See, this is life. This process. This is life. Taking what you think is going to fill you up and putting it into your lives. Into your minds. That is what life is about. When someone tells you there's a new movie, what do? You go to the cinema, and this is living life, right? You take the cinema and you put it into your mind. That's what you do, right? You put stuff into your mind. This putting stuff into your stomachs. These are just inconveniences. If you didn't have to do that, wouldn't it be nice? If you didn't have to put stuff into your bodies, food, if you didn't have to eat, would that not be a convenience? So it's a real inconvenience that you have to eat. The only bonus, the only thing that helps you to be okay with that is the fact that when you eat, you get to enjoy the taste, the smell, sight. Honestly, I think that is the reason why your tongue is right at the beginning of the door of your food pipe. Because otherwise people would forget to eat. People wouldn't eat. Because it's such an inconvenience. So this biologically, it's been engineered in such a way that for your own sustenance, your tongue, which is a receiver of taste, is placed right at the tip of your food pipe. Because unlike your lungs, which work on pressure differences, your stomach doesn't work like that. Whereas as your diaphragm makes room and creates pressure or a space of low pressure in your lungs, air starts to fill in. Yeah, and then again, you exhale. So this is how inhalation, exhalation happens. You don't necessarily have to have sweet-smelling air to breathe because it works on a pressure potential. But your food system does not work on a pressure potential. Therefore, you have to consciously eat stuff. Because you have to consciously eat stuff, they put in your tongue at the tip of your food pipe. Otherwise, you wouldn't eat. Because eating is such an inconvenience. Chewing is such an inconvenience. Swallowing is an inconvenience. Digesting is an inconvenience. Then excreting the remnants of your digestion process, this is also an inconvenience. Why do you put up with all that? It's all, you tolerate all of it because you have a tongue at the tip of your food pipe. That's why they design it like that. So this is listening to music. This is eating for pleasure. This is eating because you're hungry. Still the same. No difference whether you eat for pleasure or you eat for hunger. It's still the same. None of these are solutions to problems. Because nothing fills this. This is going out. Going on holiday. How many holidays have you been on by now? This place, that place, the other place. Traveled around the world. Yeah? And now are you full? Do you feel satisfied now? Do you feel content? Now, why is that? Because you've been trying to fill it with something that doesn't stick. See, nothing remains. How many parties have you organized by now? Parties at home, lunches, dinners, brunches, tea parties, birthday parties, at home or in other venues, and you've invited your friends and all that. See, every time you did that, you did one of this. One of this. Are you full? This is why your lives feel empty. How do I know that your lives feel empty? Exactly. Because you're here. If you were full, would you come here? No, you're here because you want more. You're asking for more implies what? Everything that had been given until now never filled you. But isn't that what you spend the entirety of your life doing? See, this is living. Living is this process. 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, doing this. This will never fill up until you start filling it with the right stuff. Shall I introduce to you the right stuff? You have to find it. You have to get it from the Buddha. The right stuff is discovered by the Buddha. And then he gives us the right stuff. Can you get us the right stuff? It has to come from the Buddha. Is it? Let's put this to a side for now. Let's see whether that is the right stuff. What are we going to do again? Live. Yeah? This is living. This is living. What is living? Taking stuff from the outside world and filling your what? Minds up with it. Okay, so all this time you were doing this. Sights, sounds, smell, taste, touch. And various combinations of the above. Now we are going to try filling ourselves up with something different. Given to us by the Buddha. This is called the what? Dham. That's why it's Dham. Something's beginning to happen. Did you notice? Something's beginning to happen. This class is now half. Half empty. Half full. Maybe let's fill it up with the old stuff again. Because it's half full, right? So surely the remaining half must be easy to fill. We'll fill it up with the stuff we got before. Go back to the old stuff. It's already half full with the Dhamma. Right? So the rest of it, now we are already halfway there. The rest of it will go back to the old stuff. Let's watch a few more movies. I mean, this is Sunday morning. Yeah? This is Sunday morning. Right. Monday. Tuesday. Wednesday. Thursday, yeah, Friday, for some of you Saturday, for some of you, not all of you, for some of you Saturday, look at what just happened. And then come back to Sunday. What's happening, ladies and gentlemen? You tell me how you want to continue living your life. This is what you call living. This, 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 this. Here to here. Here to here. You choose. I'm only here to give you the facts. Okay? I'm not going to make any decisions on your behalf. Because it's your life, you have the right to make your choices. I'm only here to show you what choices are available to you. If you wish, you can continue to keep doing this. You to come and tell me when you are full. But you have been doing this for many, many years now. Decades. Don't you feel you have become more full over the last 150 weeks than you ever felt over the last 50 years, 15 years? 20 years, 30 years. Don't you feel you are more content now? Over the last 150 weeks than you have ever felt. Over the last 10 years, 15, 20, 25, 30 years, what's the difference? What's changed? You actually started filling your mind up with stuff that can fill you up. That is the difference. You have actually begun now to start. You have begun to fill yourselves up with something that can actually fill you up, that can really truthfully fill you up. Which of these two things is meaningful and which one is meaningless? I think the answer is obvious. This is merely effort, but no result. This one, whatever effort you put in, that much you get a result out of. Think about this for your own sakes. For your own sakes, think about this. And don't take this lightly. Think about it deeply. Because you're about to make a decision about your life. At the end of this sermon, make a decision about your life. What you want to do from here on. Do you want to continue filling your life up with this stuff? And people, it's there everywhere. It's readily available. It's there everywhere. It's in the shops. It's on the streets. It's in the party. It's at the workplace. This stuff is readily available. Do you want to continue filling yourself up with this stuff? Or are you going to make a difference in your life? Because the sasana is here. And this is only available until the sasana is here. Once the sasana comes to an end, this cup will be empty. This will be empty. And once this is empty, this is no different to this. When that day comes, I will say, my apologies. That's all I will tell you. A little bit more is still left. The vast majority of it has now been used up. Minds have been filling up. And those minds that have been filled up, they're gone. They don't come back because now they're satisfied. They're content. No unfinished business. Their business is done. They came into this world looking for happiness. Happiness was found. No more looking for happiness. No more meaningless pursuits. Done. But please don't forget that this is not an endless supply. As you can see, every syringe full I take out of this and fill it to someone else is a syringe full that you don't get. What are you waiting for? I can only see one reason you're waiting for. One thing you're waiting for, that is for this cup to be empty. That's what you're waiting for, right? For this to be empty. So that then you can come and give a nice excuse. Swami, no answer. It's empty. See, even if this is half full, see, it's still not full, not to the brim. Then you can still go back to doing this. How much good is going to happen? We have already filled it up to 90%. The remaining 10, if you go back to doing the old stuff, is it going to do it? Is it? No. So this is also good advice to those who have already embarked on the noble path. You consider yourselves Dharmishta, Rajgiriyas. So if you are Dharmishta, what you are suggesting to me is you have started filling this cup with the Dhamma. But you keep going back to the old stuff. The stuff that has no potential to fill you up. Because this is essenceless. Nothing substantial here. It has no ability to fill you up. Please understand this. It has no ability to fill you up. So you can just keep on exerting yourself, toiling yourself, working hard day, night, long, weeks, years, your lifetime. But you are not going to be filled. There are many of you who are past pensionable age. That many years of working, because you wanted to fill yourself up with this stuff. Because you wanted to buy a car. You wanted to buy a nice car. First you bought the bicycle. Then you wanted to upgrade yourself, you went for a motorbike. Then that wasn't enough, you bought a three-wheeler. Not enough, you went for a car. Right, a small car. And small car not enough, you went for a big car. Big car not enough, you went for a luxury car. Then one car not enough because your neighbors have a couple more. That you got to keep up with your neighbors. Right? So you bought a couple more. Then that wasn't enough. Then you bought a caravan. Need it, right? Trying to fill yourself up. Then that wasn't enough. Then you bought yourself van, caravan, then trucks, jeeps, 4x4s, all that. Then a jet and a yacht. Why not? I mean, you know, one day you can fill yourself up with this. See how ridiculous this is? I'm trying to paint a picture here. The picture that no one shows you, but you live it. You know, at home you have these pictures on the walls, right? Portraits and landscapes and all sorts, sceneries and things. You look at them because they are your pictures. When I look through the lens of Dhamma, your life is a picture. Just like those pictures you have hanging in your walls. Your entire life, that is a picture on a wall. And I look at it sometimes. I try to study it and I try to understand why it is that people continue doing what you're doing. I'm here to ask you some questions. I want you to give me some answers. You're not answerable to me by any means, but you're answerable to yourself. Don't you think you're answerable to yourself? You're not answerable to me. You're not accountable to me, but you're accountable to yourself. Because you worked your socks off to earn yourself this human life. It did not come for free. It was a result of many years, a lot of hard work, a lot of good merit making. That is how you earned your lives. Therefore, you're accountable. At the workplace, if your boss gives you some budget to go and spend on something, maybe do a project or something, right? Maybe a construction project or some other kind of event to plan and a project. At the end of that event, must you not submit a report? A financial report, a budget report. This is how much was given to me. This is how much I spent. And this is what remained. Or if you needed to get more money, this is why you have to give your rationale. Don't you? Okay. So isn't life a project? What is the project of life? What is the project of life? Speak up. What is the project of life? To fill it up. That is the project of life. To somehow fill this up. You are given time. You are given time. You are given skill. You are given talent. Yeah? You are given ability. You are given energy. Now it's your turn to use this life to fill your mind up. This is your project. So this is your budget. So use your life to fill your mind up. This is the project. Both of these were given to you by yourselves. Because you earned your life and you earned your mind, and it's now your turn to fill your mind up with the effort, the endeavors that you do in your life. Who are you accountable to? Yourself. Therefore, if you keep doing this, would you hire yourself to do that job again? I mean, if you were a manager, would you hire yourself to do a project? Knowing what you do, to do this project? Honestly, I mean, think of it in real terms. If you were a manager looking to hire someone to run a project for you, right? And the project is very clear, fill this up with something substantial, and you give them some resources, and what they're doing is this. Would you hire that person to run your projects for you? You're looking for a project manager. Would you hire them? Why have you hired yourself? If you saw them doing that, what would you do? You'd have a conversation with them, wouldn't you? First you'd say, why are you doing? This is a performance review. What are you doing? Then you'd have a disciplinary review. And finally, you'd sack the fellow. Wouldn't you? If you were the manager, the hiring manager, you would. But look at what you're doing when you call yourselves, when you say you're living. You have a... That was just to wake you up. Excuse me. You have a project to do, which is to fill yourself up. This is your mind that you have to fill up. And you have been given life to do it within. But if you keep doing that, ladies and gentlemen, what is the point? You will just end up a failed project. When you have the Dhamma available to you, while you have the Dhamma available to you, what a waste of time it is. What a waste of energy it is. What a waste of good fortune it is to keep going back to this. These are all the movies that you watch. I'm sorry to say, but these are the movies that you watch. This is the music that you listen to. I don't want to hurt your feelings, but this is the truth. These are the takeaways. This is the food that you cook at home because you enjoy them. Not because you need them, but because you enjoy them. These are the cakes that you bake. These are the puddings that you make. These are the outings for enjoyment, for pleasure. Not because you need it, but for pleasure. These are the sightseeing tours that you go on. These are the safaris. Not because you need them. Who needs to go on a safari? You don't need to go on a safari, you want to go on a safari. Right? Needs and wants are very different things. But these are those safaris that you go on. These are those adventures that you go on. I did all of these things, but I soon realized the errors in my ways. That's why I dropped this and started filling myself up with the Dhamma. And I'm almost full. Once I'm full, I'm not going to stick around. Oh, I'll be gone. Because once my job is done, you pack up and leave, don't you? Why must you hang around after your job is done? You're just taking up space. So you make space for the next person to come along, start filling themselves up, and you exit. So once my project is done, I'm not going to stick around. But when is your project going to be done? By the look of it, looks like never. You know, if you just did nothing, I'd be okay with that. Like, you know, you took this and you just put it to a side and just remained like, I would be okay with that. My problem is not that. My problem is the fact that you're not doing nothing. You're doing something meaningless. Which one's worse? Doing nothing at all or doing something meaningless? Which one's worse? Doing something meaningless. That is why I speak on your behalf. You're not just doing nothing. You're doing something meaningless. That's terrible. Because you see, every time you do this, you're eating away into your life. You're aging. You're getting weaker. Your knees are getting weaker. Your back is getting weaker. You're growing older. You become sick. You become tired. You become exhausted. Until one day, you know, the last effort you make. Gasping for breath. You've seen this. This is not just in the dramas, not just in the movies. You've seen this. You've been there when it happened to your mother. You were there when it happened to your grandmother. You saw how she was pulling on the, making that last effort in the hope that finally she was pulling up something substantial, something that was going to fill her up. And then she'd, that was it. Is that what you want for your lives? When the Dhamma is here, this is why we invite you to the sasana, ladies and gentlemen. We invite you to the sasana because this is not empty yet. Trust me, one day this will be, and that day I will not invite you again to the sasana because it would be pointless coming to the sasana after that. One day there will be the Tripitaka, but no essence. The Tripitaka will remain, the statues will remain, the pagodas will remain, the shrine rooms will remain. All the glory, that will remain. The grandeur will remain. The ornaments will remain. The stone sculptures will remain. But no sotapannas. No teachers. No bearers of the truth. Robe bearers will remain. Truth bearers will be gone. Not all robe bearers are truth bearers. So once the truth bearers have expired, are all gone, I shall not invite you to the sasana. I won't. Because it is as useful as trying to fill your mind up with this. Is it not? When this is empty, trying to fill this cup up with whatever is in this when it's empty is as useful as trying to fill it up with what's in this. Yes or no? Well, there you go. Once this is empty, I shall not make an invitation to you. Because I don't want to waste your time. But please do try and understand. Every Netflix you watch, every track you download, every film you watch, every song you listen to, every newspaper article you read, every novel you read, it's all this because it doesn't fill you up. What are you doing? When are you going to act with some accountability? Not to me. You're not answerable to me. Not to me. Not to the Buddha. That's the thing. If you are answerable to me, I could punish you. But you're answerable to yourself, so I can't punish you. Makes no sense to punish you. Why should I punish you when you're punishing yourself? Every trip you go on, every holiday you take, every Hawaii, every here, every there, all of it, trying to fill yourself up with whatever is in this, it's the same thing. Every party, every song, every dance. To put it very short, very succinctly, every sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch that you try to experience to fill yourself up is utterly meaningless. That's why the Buddha says it is attayati harayati jigujati. Sabba sankaresu attiyati harayati jiguchati. See, this is sankara. See, sabba sankara. All of sankara. Meaning, the actions you take. All sankara. If you want, you can think of it as abhisankara. All types of abhisankara. Abhisankara are the things that you do to try and fill yourself up with something that cannot do it. Why? I don't understand. Help me understand what it is you have understood. You be the teacher for me, please. You seem to understand something that I don't, so please help me understand it. I know this is sarcasm, but this is sarcasm with empathy. You have to come out of this. That is why we encourage you to do merits. That is why all of this is okay. I know you put in a lot of time into this. Usually I don't like people wasting time. You can ask our monks at the monastery. Strongly against time wasting, because time is our only resource, it's the only thing we have, and it's the only thing we don't have, both at the same time. But this is okay. When we get out of the office to walk up to the lift, you pull up the umbrella just for a few steps to the lifts. Yeah, that's not a long way to go, and there's no sun, so why do you need the umbrella? But I let you do it. Because it earns merits so that you can start filling yourself up with something meaningful. That's why. From the lift to this hall, again, you pull the umbrella out. It's okay, I let you do it. I've never said, Mata, put it to your side. What's the point? It's just a few steps to the hall. Why do we bother? I've never said that. Because in that few minutes it takes you to bring us from there to here, there are many chittas that arise and pass away. And while you are still time rich, there's opportunity for merit making. What do you need those merits for? One, to discover the Dhamma. Because you spend enough time in your life without the Dhamma. More than enough time without the Dhamma. That is because you just didn't have enough merits to discover it, to come across it. And finally, you did because of merits. And then what you need to do is to use that Dhamma to fill yourself up. So, see, this consumes merit. This one. To do that, it takes merit. It requires merit. That's why merit making is advisable, is recommended. That's why I encourage that. But you know, you have to start taking some serious decisions about your life. None of you are too old for the sasana. You may be too old to become an anagarika. You might be too old to become an anagarika, but you're not too old to enter the sasana. The sasana is the practice of the noble path. 150 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, you have taken my time. 2 or 3 hours here, 2 hours to get here, 2 hours to get back. All that time, you have to pay for. Okay? At least 1.5 hours to get here. If there's traffic or something, then it takes about 2. Let's say 1.5, just to be okay with. To be played by you, your side, 1.5. 1.5, 1.5, either way, that's 3 hours. 3 hours here. 3 and 3, 6. 6 hours of my week you have been taking for the last 150 weeks. What is 6 times 100? That's 600. Another 50? That's 300. Altogether, 900 hours of my time. Divide that by 24 and work out how many days of my life you have taken. ₹900 of my life you have taken. So that you can finally put a stop to doing this nonsense. That is all I want for you to do. Stop doing this nonsense, this meaningless, useless, futile thing that you do. I want you to do this. I want you to do more of this. I want you to do as much of this. Because this is the only thing that will fill you up. That's why. Remember, every child you had, first child, second child, third child, every child you had, trying to fill you up with this. That's it. I'm not against having children, but I'm against having children if happiness is what you need, because that makes no sense. Have children if you want to give them a chance to Nibbana. That's fine. That makes sense. Because there's no other way a Gandharva can become human. Unless it comes through a mother's womb. Right? So if you feel particularly generous, or you feel kind and you want to help them, the Gandharva world, then have children. Have as many children as you can. If that is your intention, perfectly fine, because that you do with compassion. That's fine. So for compassionate mothers out there, or wannabe mothers, compassionate wannabe mothers, that's perfectly fine. But if you want to have a child because you want to fill your cup up with it, because you think that's going to fully fill you up, make you feel content, come on. Has it happened now? You had the first one, filled up. Why did you go for the second then? Had the second one, full? Why did you go for the third then? Do you understand on whose behalf I'm speaking here? Whose? Global population. Whose friend am I ask you? Whose? Yours? No, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your friend. Individually, I'm your friend. I don't even want this community if individually you don't benefit from it. I don't want this community. If you don't benefit from this individually, let's not have this community. Let's disperse, go home. Because otherwise it just becomes another party. And there are plenty of parties to go to every weekend. This has to be the party that ends all parties. So I speak on your behalf individually. But you're listening to it together. Fair enough. But I'm speaking to you individually. How many more years of this do you want to do? What are you waiting for now? For your hair to go gray? For your knees to give in? Are you waiting for the day you can't get out of bed alone? Are you waiting for the day you need a walking stick or a Zimmer frame? What are you waiting for? Are you waiting for the day where you can't walk alone, you need someone to hold your hand? Is that what you're waiting for? Or are you waiting until you are done with your house? Got that next promotion? Because even that is meaningless. You look so weary. You honestly do. You look tired. You look very exhausted. Maybe that's because you are. You look burdened. You look like you're at the end of your tether. You look desperate. Don't take me the wrong way, but I feel really sorry about the lay lifestyle. The purpose of a lay life. I feel really sorry about that. Not the lifestyle itself, not what you eat or where you live. It's not that. But the purpose of a lay life. What is the purpose of a lay life? Explain. What is the purpose of a lay life? Try and fill this up with whatever is in this. What is the purpose of a noble life? To fill this up with what is in this. This is the Dhamma. How much more must I explain this to you before it really clicks? How much more convincing do you need? Why do you still think sending your children abroad to get the best education possible is the answer to their problem? Why do you think watching the next movie is the answer to your problem? Why do you think getting them the latest gadgets, the latest computers, the latest devices, that is the answer to the problem? Why do you think that is the solution? Why do you think when the next promotion comes along, you'll be happy? Tell me. Let's do something easier. Shall we just empty this into this? Huh? Instead of going syringe full, let's do the entire cup. Right? Just for good measure, I'll tap on this as well in case there's something left, you know. Is that done now? You know how a lay life begins? I'm talking about a lay life. When I say lay life, I mean a purpose where the purpose is lay. Okay? This is how a lay life begins. Do you know how a lay life ends? You're looking at it. Do you know how a lay life is spent? You're looking at it again. So beginning, middle, and end. This. Empty. This is why we invite you with every ounce of energy we can muster to come and start doing something meaningful. Because we speak on your behalf, you individually, not this community. I don't care whether you're black or white. I don't care whether you're rich or poor, man or woman. I don't care whether you're a child or adult. You have been born with one of these, a mind. You were born because when you died, it was empty. In your previous life, you died empty. That's why you've come back again to complete your unfinished business, to fill yourself up. That's why you've come back again. So now we must do something meaningful, otherwise you'll have to come back again. And you want to know how to end samsara. You want to get out of this samsaric journey. But you keep trying to fill this up with this. How can that ever happen? This has to be filled with the Dhamma. I'm not having a go at you. This is not, I'm not admonishing you, okay? I'm talking to you with empathy because you have to understand the gravity of this. It is serious stuff. 150 sermons, yeah, we've done 150 sermons, let's aim for another 150. No, that should not be your goal. If when the next 150 is done, you are still here. Yeah? If when the next 150 comes along and you are still here, then these servants have not done a lot for you. But think about those who are now there, who have chosen the noble life, who have finally realized that filling them up with the Dhamma is the answer. Those are the real victors. And remember, it didn't take them 150. It didn't take them 150. For some, 50 was enough. Just like when the Buddha first gave his first sermon. Among the five, there was one for whom the first sermon was enough. Why? How was that possible? Merit. The power of merits. None of you are too old. None of you are too young. None of you are too male or none of you are too female. If you could ever be like that. So there's no problem with you. Come take your first steps in the sasana. Why are we waiting for the next 150? You know, I'm a doctor. This is my clinic. I'm not happy about the fact that there are patients here. Particularly if it's the same patient week on week. Because that's like spitting at me on my face and saying, your treatments don't work. I can't be delighted about the fact that my patients keep coming back to me week on week. How can I be delighted if I were the doctor? If I drove a bus and I'm the conductor, then yes. That I have a bus to drive and I want to take my passengers up and down. But I'm not a conductor, I'm a doctor. So I don't want to see these patients every week. I want to treat them so that they're healed and they don't have to come back. Ideally, we must always have new faces. And only new faces. That's when I know that these programs are successful. And the old faces are, they start shifting towards the noble path. That's why I said at the beginning, this number 150, that doesn't excite me. As a matter of fact, I could tell myself, 150 unsuccessful sermons. Yeah. Those who were there when I did my first are still here. What a preacher I am. If I had a title, I'd be stripped of it by now. Don't you think so? Those who were there in the first are still here. It probably suggests to me. That suggests to me. Right? More or less, it suggests to me that I have yet failed to show you that it is this stuff that needs to go in there, not this. I still haven't convinced you. Or I still haven't been able to convince you. It is either because you don't have the merits, or I just don't have what it takes to convince you. I'm not disappointed. But I feel for you. Because I have come to a point where I don't think of you as being a separate being to me. We are all minds. So if I care about the salvation of this mind, I must care equally about the salvation of that mind. I don't discriminate between minds. If happiness was available and only one of us could take it, I don't care which one does. If there was a serving of happiness, a serving of happiness was available, only you or I, one of us could take it, I don't mind which one. You take your pick. Let's toss a coin. I don't mind. I toss a coin, I call heads, I get the toss comes heads, and you still say, can we have another one? Yeah, sure, let's go for another go. And it's heads again, and you say, yeah, I know it's heads, but do you mind if I go? Fair enough, come take it. It's fine. Some mind has to be freed, that's all. It doesn't have to be my mind. In the same vein, then when these minds continue to suffer, because you're still trying to fill yourself up with this, that's why I said, doing nothing is more respectable than doing something useless. Bring dignity back into your lives. Because what you're doing right now is indignified. I'm being a little bit critical today. Bring dignity back into your lives. Do something dignified. This is not dignified. This does not suit someone like you. I think of you more than that. I think you are better than that. I have a lot more respect for you than you have for yourselves. Which is what I find baffling. I can't make my mind about the fact that you are still settling for this. Therefore I speak to you and say, what the heck are you doing? Stop this nonsense and start doing something proper, something meaningful, something essenceful. But you go back to your lives and start doing this again. This is indignified, ladies and gentlemen. Someone of your caliber should not be doing this. Give yourself a little bit more respect. Give yourself a little bit more dignity. Treat yourself with respect. Where's your self-respect, I ask? I know you don't burp in public because you care about your self-respect and the other end as well. I know you don't do that in public. And if ever it did happen, you would excuse profusely, right? Because you care about your self-respect. But what about this? Does this agree with your sense of self-respect? Are you doing something respectful, something meaningful? Something dignified when you keep doing this? Traveling, eating, drinking, enjoying, watching movies, listening to music, reading novels, all of that, playing games, just browsing on the internet, watching just YouTube stuff, Facebook, all that. As you while your way, hours away, while your life away, do you think that is dignified for a human? I mean, for a human, did you know you're humans? Just checking. You know you're humans, right? Like, you're a human. It's not, you know, don't take it lightly. You're a human being. You must treat yourselves with a little bit more respect. You're a human being. Human beings need not resort to doing this. So where's the gap then? Is it your willpower? Is it your courage? Is it your determination? You've got to identify where you're lacking. And fix it soon. Is it your lack of wisdom that lets you down? I will help with that. Are you not strong enough inside, internally? Is it the resistance that you fear will come to you from the outside? Is it the peer pressure? What is it? Whatever it is, figure it out. Solve it. Address it, because I'm not going to be here forever. When this is empty, we won't talk about this. When mine is full, I'll be gone. Then you'll be left with one of these and one of these. And good luck to you. The sasana is no easy matter. Don't take it lightly. That's why I said last week, I have no words to explain to you, to describe to you how fortunate we are to have come across a sasana. People will put you on a pedestal. That's because they want something from you. I'm not putting you on pedestals because I don't want anything from you. I want something for you. That is what I call love. I don't want anything from you. I want something for you. So at the end of this encounter, at the end of this relationship, I have gained nothing from you. That's okay. Because I don't want anything from you. But you have gained something. That's what I want. You have become someone better. You have filled yourself up. I don't think there's a single talk in town where they talk to you like this. They'll tell you how good you are, how nice you are, how beautiful you are, how handsome you are, how rich you are, how powerful you are. They'll bring you on a stage and then they will confer honors and titles. People will come up to you and stand pose for pictures and tell you how fortunate it is that they have met you and how you are. A big fry. They will put you on pedestals because they want something from you. That's because they are not filled up either. They are not full either. Therefore, what they are trying to do is take something from you and try and fill themselves up. Come, ladies and gentlemen, come forth. Come forward. Now is your time. 150 sermons we have been doing this together. What has happened to you over those weeks? What's holding you back? Is it because you're a mother? For how long? Do you want to have your motherhood hold you back? I'm not suggesting you have to become an anagarika. But if your means allow you to, if there's a freedom to do so, there are other opportunities. I don't want you to necessarily become a monk. Please understand that. I want you to be with the Dhamma. That's what I want for you. But I know in this lifestyle that you live, that is hardly achievable because you have to be with me. You can be with me for half a day, but the rest of it, you're in the wild world out there. And people continue to infiltrate your minds and drop all sorts of nonsense into your heads. Where do you get the chance to do merits? Where do you get the chance to do kusala? Where do you get the chance to spend time with the Dhamma? Where is your teacher who tells you what you did was wrong? The way you think is wrong? Who's there to guide you? When you have the wrong emotional response to a situation, who's there to guide you? But while all that is going on, you're aging. Otherwise, find a stop button on your age. Do all your stuff that you have to do. Do your responsibilities. Fulfill all of them. And then when you're ready to come to the sasana, you hit the resume button. And then you start aging. But that's not how it happens. For good or for worse, we have the same time. That is why I speak to you like this, because you need to have a sense of urgency. You really do. You need to have a sense of urgency. I don't want you to become monks. That is not what I'm here for. I'm not here to ordain all of you. I don't want anagarikas from you either. But I want you to come and spend your time with the Dhamma. Because that is the only option. That is the only solace. Any other venture is utterly meaningless. I have proven it to you. That's why even today, you are empty. How many more years of emptiness and empty effort do you want to continue doing? I used to love watching TV, but I stopped not because watching TV was unvirtuous, because watching TV was meaningless. I used to love watching films. I used to love going out eating, trying out different cuisines, traveling the world. It was one of my favorite pastimes. Those are things I really enjoyed doing. I didn't stop them because it is not suitable for me to do as a monk. That's not the reason I stopped. I stopped it because it's meaningless. I was not filling myself up with anything. That's why. Nothing to do with monkhood. Nothing to do with monkhood. My choices are wisdom driven. That's what drives my choices. Wisdom. So you need to have a sense of agency and you need to have a sense of urgency. Both. None of you are too old once again. None of you are too young. Your gender is not a problem. But if I can plant this sense of urgency in your minds, if that is all I can do, that's fine. Because then you will find a way to uproot yourselves. You will find a way to relieve yourselves and start filling yourself up with Dhamma. Otherwise, we'll just spend another 150 weeks. I will give the sermons. You will offer pirikara. I will take that pirikara back to the monastery. Right? We'll continue building the monastery up for those who are willing to jump on board. You will, of course, earn some merits. But why just merits? Why do we postpone our liberation to the next sasana when it is possible today? Think about this, please, for your sake. I'm speaking about this with passion because if I were you, I would want my teacher to talk to me like this. If I was in the audience, and if I needed the kick up my backside, I can only give you a verbal kick. This is that verbal kick. Remember, you're in the midst of people who want something from you. Okay? Don't forget that. You're in the midst of people who want things from you. They want your fame. They want your name. They want your money. They want your powers. They want your authority. They want your contacts. They want your daughter. And they want your son. Some of them might even want your wife. That's why they're with you. They think you have happiness and they want to get it from you somehow and get it for them. Therefore, people want something from you. Show me one person who wants something for you. Again, please don't take this the wrong way, but I'm only putting this in these words because of how I feel about you. When I look at you, sometimes I feel like a herd of cows being taken to the slaughterhouse. Don't take the cow part of it. Okay, I'm not trying to suggest your cows, but what I'm trying to emphasize is I feel like you are a herd of cows being taken to the slaughterhouse. It's just a matter of time. Because people want something from you. What do you want from a cow? When you see a cow, what do you think? I want something for the cow or from the cow? You want something for the cow or from the cow? You want something from the cow. Why do you give it food to eat? Because you want something for it, or you want something from it? You want something from it. You feed it because you get milk from it. And once it's done giving you all the milk it can, then next. You know what's next. That's why people feed cows. Why else would people feed cows? Unless, of course, the cow is holy. You have a holy cow. You know, I mean, in some cultures, but most part, you know, again, the funny thing is, even the, in countries where they consider the cow holy, it is those countries that produce the most beef. Bizarre. How that happens. Nevertheless, that is what I feel when I look at you. A pack of cows being taken to the slaughterhouse. There are big cows, little cows, old cows, young cows, fat cows, thin cows, well-fed cows, not so well-fed cows. I just don't see any happy cows, that's all. Why do you wait until you are taken to the slaughterhouse? Because once you're taken there, you don't even know that you're there. All you know is either your neck is severed from the rest of your body, or they shoot you, or they electrocute you, and you're dead. That's it. While you're alive, they will take all the milk they can from you. This is your sweat. Your sweat and tears. They'll take all the milk they can from you. We call it sweat and tears. Once they have milked the life out of you, then they will take your blood. That is the meat. For some people, you are worth more dead than alive. Do you know that? So they are waiting until you are dead. Especially if you have these, insurance plans and all sorts. If you have a good, life assurance plan, or you have a last will, or you've amassed good, sizable property, right? There will be people. I'll just call people. Not nice to name them, right? There are people who are waiting until you are gone. So when they get the call from the hospital. Like, yes, mother, dead? No. Nothing could make them happier than the news of your demise. You don't believe me? That there are people who would rather have you dead than alive? Seriously, you don't believe me? How naive can you be? That is because they want something from you. Find a teacher who wants something for you. Find the sasana. Find the mahasangha. They want something for you. And once you have found it, ladies and gentlemen, start filling yourself up. Don't waste your time. This is not here forever. I have another video to show you. We had Poson Poya recently at the monastery. And we unveiled a newly sculpted statue of the Buddha. It is an iconic figure for all that enter the monastery. Not necessarily to remind them of a person, but to remind them that there is no person. That is what it's meant to serve. Buddha is no person. That is what it serves. As they walk into the monastery and they look up and they see the statue, it is a reminder that the reason I'm here is to become no one. Because all sorts of people walking through those doors, big ones, little ones, high profile ones and not so high profile ones. People who consider themselves very important and people who don't think anything of them at all. People who think very low of them as well as people who think very highly of them. All sorts of people walking through those gates and they look up at the statue, which reminds them that I'm no one after all. I'm neither man nor woman. I'm not this important person in society that people tell me that I am. Because Buddha is just the truth. So we unveiled that statue for Poson Poe. I think there were many of you were there for the event. And then we also lit the Dolos Mahe Pahana, which is meant to be a lamp that is lit throughout the year. Dolos Maha is the 12 months. So it symbolizes wisdom. A lamp that symbolizes wisdom lit throughout the year. It is a reminder to people why they are here, to light the lamp of wisdom. It is a reminder of how the sasana works. So people who come in, devotees are given the opportunity to pour a bit of oil into the lamp. There's a constant supply of oil that keeps the lamp lit, which hopefully serves as a reminder as to how the sasana works. Every drop of oil that is burnt becomes light and then is released to the universe. But every drop that is drawn through the wick draws in the next drop. And drop after drop after drop, each drop goes from being a drop of oil to the light. So that's how the sasana works. Each drop brings another drop along with it. No drop goes alone. They go with other drops. So you don't have to put the oil in exactly the right place. As long as there's oil there somewhere, just pour your oil there. That's how it works. Because oil has the tendency to take other drops of oil with it as the wick burns it and turns it into the light of wisdom. So that is what the Dolos Mahe Pahana is there to represent. How our journey begins, enters the sasana, and we go through the wick of purity. That is what it's meant to represent. It's white in color. Initially the oil, it's more colorful, golden, a shade of yellow, if you like. That is the variety that you experience in a lay life. Variety. Then you turn white, pure. After that, you turn into the light of wisdom. So the Dolos Mahe Pahana was also unveiled to our devotees. I would like to share with you the video of the day. Again, another opportunity for you to rejoice in this collective merit making. Whether you were there or not, it matters not, because now you can be there in your mind. And rejoice in it so that you can earn as much merits as someone who was there in person on the day. Did you see the scene where at the beginning, robes drenched in blood, that is how it all began. There was a time when monks were slaughtered, murdered, assassinated. Because in history, it is said that when people wanted to conquer our lands, they knew that the only way to do that would be to void this land of the Mahasangha. Because the Mahasangha, not bearers of robes, but bearers of the truth. The bearers of truth had a message of harmony and unity. The Dhamma helped people to set aside differences, to see that everything was one. Therefore, there was no room for disharmony. There was no room for disunity. There was no room for separation, conflict. Every mind the Dhamma touched, those minds turned from minds that were vexing to minds that were at peace. Therefore, people stopped looking for things from others and began to seek things for others. They became protectors of each other, friends. Therefore, the best way to create conflict is to rid this land of the Mahasangha. So if this land that we live in is ever to fall into the hands of others, shall we say, those who have not seen the truth, the one and only way to do that would be to rid this land of the bearers of the truth. Don't mistake the bearers of the robe to be the bearers of the truth. Otherwise, you will be fooled when you see or hear certain events, incidents, stories of how bearers of robes have conducted themselves in certain ways, and you might then fall out of the sasana or fall out with the sasana. That is not right. Our ancestors, they bore these robes and they upheld the noble truths. They wrote manuscripts on the leaves of Palmyra leaves. They wrote the truth. And then when there were famine struck, the elderly monks, what they did, they had become arahants, most of them by the time. They determined to pass away. It is possible once you become an arahant, it is said, that even when you have life left, you can determine to pass away. They did it so that the younger monks could live on. The samaneras could live on. The newly ordained bhikkhus could live on so that they could carry on the legacy of the sasana. So when you saw that little monk, that young monk, moving up close to the old monk who was gasping for his breath, that was a moment where he was transferring what he had understood, the truths. He was whispering it in the ear of the young samanera. Inspiring him to carry on this truth so that today you and I have been gifted with it. Let's not forget, ladies and gentlemen, today we rejoice in all this merit making. We at least have the stone sculpture of a Buddha. We have the Dhamma. We have the essence of the Dhamma. We have the noble Sangha, because there were these very Sangha, these very monks and nuns back in the day who sacrificed their lives to preserve the sasana. They never fought back because weapons was not in their armory. They didn't wield weapons of iron. They wielded weapons of wisdom. Because they knew to kill someone is the last thing that one must do in the name of the sasana. Therefore, monks never did that. The Mahasangha never did that. The king had his armies, yes. But the Buddha was also a king. He also had his army. But they always fought a war of non-violence. It is that sasana today we benefit from. It is that sasana that is today available in right in front of our very eyes. It is that sasana today that brings you these sermons, that brings you the truth week on week, And it is that sasana that questions you today. When are you going to come in? How much longer do you want to keep doing this? When are you going to start doing the sasana? The sasana that was preserved, the sasana that was fought for, the sasana that was sacrificed for, so that today you could benefit from it. When are you going to bring yourselves forward? Bring yourselves forth into the sasana. You're very good people, I know that. You're very kind-hearted people. You're very loyal to the sasana, that also I know. Perhaps at this point your loyalty to the sasana goes beyond your loyalty to anyone else living. Your loyalty to the sasana is now there. I understand that and I admire that. Because the sasana is what's going to help you as well as those with you and among you, your family, your friends, all of them to find salvation. It is a sasana. Therefore, your loyalty to the sasana must be supreme, and rightly so. So I don't question your loyalty. My only question is your diligence. It's about your diligence. It's about, are you doing the best you can? If you are doing the best you can, excellent. If you're not doing the best you can, then get ready. Start doing the best you can. Your best will be different to someone else's best. That's fine. This gentleman's best will be different to this gentleman's, and that's fine. This lady's will be different to that lady's. That's okay. But your best, are you doing your best? Your personal best? If you are, fantastic. If not, let's start. Before I conclude, I have another short video to show you. Alongside these sermons that happen at Gateway, there's been a Dhamma school that's been running at Royal Institute. Our monks have been doing that there. And Anagarikas. So every Sunday, while we depart the monastery, myself and Sudhasihandru and our Anagarika Mahathas to get into Rajagiriya, there's a bus that comes from two actually. One to take the Swamin Mahathas and another to take our Anagarika Mahathas. And they've been doing that Dhamma school for some time now. That Dhamma school is now open to all students. Initially, it was only the RI students were enrolled there, but now it's open to all students. It is also on a Sunday, so the timing is not ideal, given that you're here on a Sunday. But if you can spread the word, perhaps those who cannot come here on a Sunday, maybe those who only watch these talks online on YouTube, then they don't have to be here on a Sunday. If they're available around Havelock Town, then they can join the Dhamma school. So the Swami Nivasis are there, the Anagarika Mahatmis are there for boys and girls. So I have a short video just to show you the Dhamma school itself, so you have the details and just to get a feel for what it must be like. So for any children who live around Havelock Town, it's an English medium, so you know, even if there are children who come from abroad, this is a great opportunity. As a matter of courtesy, I asked the school management here whether it would be okay to show this video. It is only right that I do that, right? Only as a matter of courtesy. You know the response I got back? Should you even ask? What does that tell you? I only ask as a matter of courtesy because this is a school, that's another school. So in the conventional sense, these are competing organizations. But you see, when the Dhamma comes into the picture, when the Sasana comes into the picture, we are all one. So I was very impressed and very pleased to hear that response from the school management. And I also had a very deep sense of gratitude, because I felt we are in the right place. We are in the right place, and this is the right space for this community. Because that love, that affection, that desire to serve good to everyone is what makes this program thrive. It's the coming together of everyone, the Mahasangha, the devotees, the school management, all of this together is what makes this possible. So I thought I'd mention that as well. So you can rejoice in the goodness that springs eternal from these noble hearts. Not our noble hearts, these are also noble hearts. Let's leave it there for today then. Will you take away this message? I bring these props from time to time to help the message stick. Because even if you forget the face, even if you forget the voice, even if you forget the messenger, as long as you remember the message, that will save you. These are to help you remember, because you will always remember the sermon with the cup. You might forget that it was 149th sermon, but you will remember that in that particular sermon, a Swaminvase, someone, came in and he spoke about the futile nature of our lay approach to life. And why there is only one thing that is right, that is to fill your lives up with Dhamma. So long may this message be implanted in your mind, and long may you remember this in every endeavor that you take in life. Let's do the merit transfer and bring the sermon to a close. First and foremost, let us take a moment to transfer this merit the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha, transferred it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today, so that we may understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer this merit to the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer this message to the Mahanayaka Theras, Yananayaka Theras of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to fulfill and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana. May we also transfer this message to my teacher Guru Swami Mahansi, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also transfer this message to friends of our monastery, our devotees, who for the sake of their own merits and to help prosper the Sasana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes all of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who pass on your know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer this merit to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our acquaintances, our employers and our employees, as well as our teachers, our companions, and anyone and everyone who helped us and supported us in any way, shape or form. May they all rejoice in these merits. May by the power of these merits they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer these merits to the Devas and Brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves to fulfill and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer this message to our guardian deities who keep watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer this message to our forefathers, our ancestors, Those who passed away in our name, reminding ourselves that it is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to enjoy the comforts of life and practice the Dhamma as we do. Let us transfer this message to all of them. Let us also transfer this message to those who commit and sacrifice their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, as well as those who lost their lives in the wars, be their friend or foe, and the armed forces as well as the police force. Let us also transfer this message to those who lost their lives in natural disasters and calamities such as tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, floods, pandemics and so on. Reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all have been friends of ours, parents of ours, siblings of ours, those who have helped us, supported us and assisted us, and therefore with an abundance of compassion and loving kindness, and a sense of gratitude for all that they have done for us, let us transfer all these merits to all of them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may you and I, and everyone who has helped make this program a success, become a Rahatan Vahanse or an Arahatiranin Vahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Sri Sambuddha Sasana itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. The Mahasangha will transfer the blessings to you. Raga ginnan midatva dvesha ginnan midatva moha ginnan midatva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravatva raga gini niveva dvesha gini niveva moha gini niveva nivansata labheva nivansata labheva nivansata labheva tulvange suvisi ananta maha guna balen siyalu loka siyalu satyoma nibbana parama sukhaya suvitara vetva sadhu sadhu sadhu.